Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Health. What does the health of pollinators have to do with the safety of our food supply? Today, we're joined by Larissa Walker, the Pollinator Campaign Director at the Center for Food Safety, to learn more. Larissa, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
So before we jump in, I wonder if you can tell us why at the Center for Food Safety is it important to have someone whose work is committed to pollinators?
Well, Center for Food Safety, we're a national nonprofit organization, and we work to protect public health and the environment by curbing the impacts of industrial agriculture and instead promoting sustainable forms of agriculture and organic agriculture. And the pollinator program really took off a few years ago here when a number of pollinator species started suffering adverse impacts from uses of certain pesticides. So it's quite relevant to our mission and also our member interests to protect these critical species.
So when we're talking about pollinators, what are we talking about?
So we're talking about honeybees, many wild bees like bumblebees, monarch butterflies, birds, bats, beetles. I mean, there are a number of species that pollinate, but the primary pollinators are definitely bees, whether managed or wild.
And so when you're kind of like dividing your work time up or focus, figuring out like what campaigns you're going to focus on for the year, how do you kind of create a hierarchy? What amount of your work is kind of offensive and what is kind of defensive, reacting to things that are kind of happening out in the world more broadly?
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty even split for the most part. I mean, I think a lot of what we're doing is somewhat responsive to what's actually happening out in the agricultural arena and what's happening on the ground, such as pesticide issues. So we are responding to a lot of concerns that are arising from those issues, but we're also doing a lot of, proactive work with outreach and encouraging the public to take, really great steps to help us protect these species and raise awareness about the issue. So I'd say it's pretty evenly divided.
So I feel like, kind of in the media generally, for the last couple of years, we've been hearing these dire reports, honeybees are in danger, monarch butterflies are on the brink of extinction. Are things as dire as that? I mean, what is the landscape as we sit, here in 2015?
Mm-hmm. Things are definitely dire. I mean, the situation that's occurring right now with honeybees in particular is quite concerning because they are such efficient pollinators for many of the foods that we rely on. It's estimated that pollinators, and specifically bees, are responsible for about one in every three bites of food we eat. So the fact that their numbers are declining as rapidly as they are is concerning. But beyond population declines, many species of pollinators, such as bees and butterflies, also just are suffering from poor health, and they're just not as efficient in pollinating, and they're not as productive as they once were. So the loss of honeybees has definitely hit a peak here in the U.S. We definitely are seeing commercial beekeepers and urban and backyard beekeepers reporting alarmingly high overwintering losses and losses of their colonies all year round. And that's a problem. It's very challenging for beekeepers to keep up with pollination demands and keep their hives healthy. And with monarch butterflies, I mean, that situation is also quite concerning. We've seen monarch butterfly populations decline by over 90% in under 20 years.
Wow.
It's really, really big.
And are these, are the kind of issues as they relate to the declines of populations and kind of reduction in the health of the pollinators, are these things that we're seeing specifically here in the U.S., or is this a global issue?
It's a global issue. I mean, this has been, particularly with honeybees, we've seen a lot of countries really look at this issue closely over the last couple of decades, and even more so in the last few years with respect to a connection to pesticide use. And that's been a real big issue lately in the European Union. In fact, about a year ago, they took action to suspend certain uses of industrial pesticides because of concerns for honeybee losses. So it's definitely a global issue. We need pollinators all over the world. for our food supply and also for our ecosystem health.
So I want to get something clear for folks, like, where do bees come from? I mean, without being like too elementary, where does that process begin? Kind of how are they kind of grown, or are there like bee or honeybee farms? What's the kind of source of honeybees?
I think the ultimate source of honeybees might be a little off from that, but would be the beekeepers. But, you know, honeybees are not a native bee species to North America. North America is home to over 4,000 species of wild bees, but honeybees were brought to the U.S. in about the 1600s, and we've been managing honeybees ever since then. So there are, honeybees that are produced. There are a number of beekeepers who are queen producers, and so they'll produce queens, and those queens can be, you know, purchased by commercial beekeepers, and then they can use the queens and introduce them into their hives. But honeybees also survive on their own in the U.S. now. They have been introduced here, so there are wild honeybee hives that exist without beekeepers' assistance, but most of the honeybees here in the U.S. are kept and managed by beekeepers.
I didn't know that honeybees weren't. I guess, like, my assumption was, like, they were just always here and around, and then someone, like, rounded a few up, and we went from there, but...
Yeah, I think honeybees often, we like to say, they steal the pollinator spotlight because everyone's most familiar with them. But in fact, there's all these really incredible species of wild bees that are native to the U.S. and North America. And they often don't get the credit or attention that they deserve because they're quite impressive pollinators as well and equally important to our food supply.
So when you're looking across a geographic region as large as the United States with so many different kind of climates and regions and areas, are we seeing these decline? The declines are happening kind of equally across the board, or declines happening in concentrated areas? When you're looking to kind of analyze why this is happening, I feel like for me, I want to know kind of where it's happening first, and then hopefully that would inform why. But maybe it doesn't work like that.
Sure. No, it's a great question, and I think one of the issues we have in the U.S. is that we aren't actively tracking the population status of wild bees. It's very hard to do that. We don't have scientists on the ground who are all over the country looking at what is going on with, you know, these thousands of species of wild bees here. But we do have beekeepers, and they are our best kind of barometers for what is the health and population of honeybees in the U.S. And so across the country, there are beekeepers, you know, in every area of the U.S. who are experiencing losses and poor colony health. But, you know, more so what we've seen in the last decade or so has been a lot of beekeepers reporting abnormal losses or acute bee kills where their honeybees are just dying outright when they are near agricultural fields. And that would be usually the result of a pesticide, you know, related bee kill.
So why is it not as simple as just saying, like, okay, hey, stop using this pesticide?
I think one of the reasons it's not that simple is because a lot of farmers have begun to rely on certain, you know, pesticides as a tool. One of the most concerning aspects to a particular type of pesticide that's been kind of in the spotlight with respect to bee kills and poor pollinator health has been a class of systemic insecticides called neonicotinoids, or neonics for short. And those chemicals are actually coated onto a lot of the seeds that we use for annual field crops. So the majority of corn, canola, cotton, wheat, soybean seeds, they're all coated with this insecticide. So a lot of times, you know, farmers don't even have a choice whether or not to use these chemicals. That's how we're selling these products now.
So what do we do?
I think one thing we do is make sure there's a lot of attention around the issue and we educate people. Another thing we're doing is working on this issue in a legal arena. So we, Center for Food Safety, has filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency for failure to protect honeybees and other pollinator species from the harms of these chemicals, because there is a wealth of scientific evidence. I mean, it's just skyrocketed the amount of peer-reviewed scientific studies that have come out in the last decade or so which indicate harms from these specific chemicals, the neonics, to pollinators and bees in particular. So there is legal action happening, which is great. There are members of Congress who have raised concerns about this, and there's been legislation introduced to suspend uses of these particularly harmful chemicals. And there's been a lot of grassroots support and activism across the country trying to educate people to avoid using these chemicals in their backyards and gardens, and also encourage, you know, public lands within their communities to stop using these products as well. We use them everywhere. They're the most widely used insecticides in the world.
So no small task. Now, are the monarchs, are they susceptible in the same way that the honeybees are to these pesticides? Is it an overlapping issue, or is it a different thing that is causing the frankly insane decline in the monarchs?
Definitely, it is an insane decline. There's a little bit of overlap. So the same insecticides that are harming bees. There's been some preliminary research that's come out, actually some just in the last week or so, that has indicated that these are actually harmful to monarch larvae and also to the longevity of monarch butterflies. But that's preliminary research, and there does need to be more on neonics and the impact monarchs. But the monarch issue more broadly is actually a little bit different, but still within the frame of problems with our industrial agriculture system, and that's the issue of herbicides, so particularly glyphosate, which is also known as Roundup as the brand name, has been detrimental to milkweed populations, specifically within the Midwest area, the Corn Belt region, where a lot of the eastern population of monarch butterflies breed, and that's the population that we're all very familiar with and love to watch as they migrate south to Mexico. Incredible species, but the herbicide issue and wiping out milkweed plants has really been the big issue that's facing monarch butterflies right now, and still is.
So what do we lose? What do we lose if tomorrow we wake up and we have no bees and we have no monarch butterfly? What's at risk here?
There are a lot of things at risk. I think first and foremost, our food supply is at risk, and I don't say that we wouldn't have any food to eat, because that's not true. We don't, you know, pollinators are not responsible for every single crop out there, but they are responsible for giving us a really healthy and diverse food supply. So many of our favorite fruits and vegetables would not be available to us, certainly in the quantities that they are now. That's concerning. But beyond that, they're also critical to a healthy and functioning ecosystem. We, you know, think of honeybees and even monarch butterflies as indicator species. So if they are not doing well, it's usually indicative of a larger environmental problem, and there are probably many other species that we're not even aware of that are suffering as well from many of the same problems. And that's just not good all around.
So kind of in some ways they are like a stand-in for the canary in the coal mine.
Yes, and we actually, there's a renowned monarch butterfly scientist, Dr. Lincoln Brower, who has coined a term I'm quite fond of in calling the monarch butterfly the canary in the cornfield. So I think it's quite spot on in this case.
Well, I want to ask you about something. So, and I'm not sure that you're going to be able to speak to this, so if you're not, no problem. But I was talking with Steve Wood of Poverty Lane Orchards and Farnham Hill Ciders, an apple grower and cider producer here in the Northeast, about the Arctic apple, the world's first kind of genetically engineered apple that has just been approved and, you know, potentially may come to market in the coming years. And I'm wondering if that type of news kind of impacts your work with pollinators and how you kind of hear that and respond to it and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, well, the Arctic apple is something that we've definitely been concerned about here at CFS. You know, we've been tracking the kind of move of that through the regulatory process. But, I think there are a lot of concerns with many elements of our industrial agricultural system, and genetic engineering is one of them. And a lot of cases, you know, it's problematic because genetically engineered crops go hand in hand with increased pesticide use. And that's certainly been the case with genetically engineered Roundup Ready crops like corn and soybeans. Those crops have really been what's led to a big spike in the use of glyphosate and other herbicides, Roundup, on corn and soybean fields. And it's that that, you know, crop and those uses that's wiped out milkweed species. So genetic engineering in general, you know, when it causes increases in pesticides, we have a lot of concerns for that. But the Arctic apple, I mean, there are a lot of uncertainties there. We really don't know, you know, this is, you know, a type of genetic engineering where there's not a lot of science showing the safety of these types of technologies, and that's something that I think we should be concerned about.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks. I was thinking, because we had Steve on the show last week, wanted to hear your thoughts. Well, I know folks, if they want to learn more about the work, they can visit the website, centerforfoodsafety.org. They can click through to the pollinator section, but you guys also do work in many other areas. For the pollinator campaign specifically, what's the best way for people to get involved right now or support your work?
The best way to get involved is to sign some of the petitions we have going on right now. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently considering listing monarch butterflies as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, so it's really critical that we get a lot of public support for that action, and you can sign a petition on our website to do so. It's also really important that people contact their members of Congress. You know, there's support for these issues in Congress, thankfully, and the more that they hear from their constituents that pollinators are something people are concerned about, that's great. So I definitely encourage that. And go out and plant some pollinator-friendly habitat. Just make sure you don't use any pesticides on it.
Well, because I know you're located down in D.C., this is a question I was asking Todd, who was with us in the first half of the show. I'm wondering if there are particular legislators that you would like to shine a light on for their leadership on this issue.
Definitely. I think Representatives John Conyers and Earl Blumenauer have been just incredible in terms of the steps they've taken to protect pollinator species. So a big thanks to both of them for introducing the Saving America's Pollinators Act. So they're definitely that's the gold standard for pollinator protection right now on the Hill.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those interesting things as we're thinking more and more about, you know, how our elected officials are shaping and influencing our food supply. I definitely want to take note to point out folks who are supporting the work and then for folks who are maybe working in the opposite direction. But regardless, Larissa, I want to thank you so much for taking some time to join us and inform us briefly on the work that you're doing and on the current state of the pollinator landscape. I really appreciate you having us as part
pleasure.
Of your
Thanks
day.
For having me on. Thank you so much.
For Heritage Radio Network, I'm Erin Fairbanks.